VCY America presents Crosstalk, a nationwide call-in program discussing issues that have an effect on our families, our communities, our churches, our nation, and our world. Crosstalk, an opportunity for you to voice your concerns for biblical principles. And now live by satellite and around the world on the internet at vcyamerica.org. Here is today's Crosstalk.
We do. Thank you for joining us on Crosstalk today. We are going to be having a news roundup today in that tomorrow we are looking forward to having a special Father's Day tribute. And we'd like to just give you notice in advance that you'd be thinking about what tribute you can make in honor of your father. And we'll have more details on that tomorrow. But that is our plan for tomorrow, Lord willing, to have a Father's Day tribute. The importance of fathers and the importance of dads in the home, and certainly we'll give you opportunity to bear testimony of that tomorrow on the program. There is a lot certainly that's going on across the nation, and we can't help but continue to notice what's happening on streets across the nation and the war on cops that's going on as well here. We'll have some stories on that related issue. First of all, the news that broke today, and I have it, this one from WND.com, Supreme Court said today that the Trump administration did not jump through all the necessary administrative hoops that are required for it to cancel Barack Obama's immigrant-protecting DACA program. The opinion specifically said that the court was not deciding on whether the Deferred Action on Childhood Arrivals program, that's DACA, should in fact be dropped. It just said that the Trump administration's move to rescind it failed to follow the rules of the Administrative Procedure Act. Fox News reported the 5-4 decision written by, Chief Justice John Roberts, who once again joined far-left members of the court. The cancellation process, the court said, was arbitrary and capricious. We do not decide whether DACA or its rescission are sound policies. The wisdom of those decisions is none of our concern, Roberts said. We address only whether the agency complied with the procedural requirement that it provided a reasonable explanation for its action. In other words, he said the Trump administration did not give a reasonable explanation. Roberts claimed in his majority opinion that the Trump administration didn't consider the conspicuous issues regarding the forbearance or the impact of those in the program, which essentially allows them exemptions from federal law so they can remain in the United States. That dual failure raises doubts about whether the agency appreciated the scope of its discretion or exercised that discretion in a reasonable manner, the opinion said. The appropriate recourse is therefore to remand to DHS so that it may consider the problem anew. You see, former President Obama granted some 700,000 people who are in the United States illegally exemption from federal law because they arrived as children. They're given 2-year periods of deferred action from deportation, renewable, and become eligible for a work permit. But the program was never implemented by Congress, only by Obama's order. So President Trump decided to withdraw that order, and the courts interfered now, ordering that the process to shut it down is flawed. The fight was so clouded that the 9 justices they generated some half a dozen opinions on this one question, including multiple opinions that agreed partly with the majority and agreed partly with the dissent. The majority dissent written by Clarence Thomas went directly to the heart of the fight, saying between 2001 and 2011, Congress considered over 24 bills that would have granted lawful status to millions of aliens who were illegally brought to this country as children. Each of these legislative efforts failed. In the wake of this impasse, the Department of Homeland Security under President Barack Obama took matters into its own hands without any purported delegation of authority from Congress and without undertaking a rulemaking. DHS unilaterally created a program known as Deferred Action for Childhood Arrivals, DACA. The 3-page DACA memorandum made it possible for approximately 1.7 million illegal aliens to qualify for temporary lawful presence and certain federal and state benefits. When President Donald Trump took office in 2017, his acting Secretary of Homeland Security, acting through yet another memorandum, rescinded the DACA memorandum. To state it plainly, he writes, the Trump administration rescinded DACA the same way that the Obama administration created it, unilaterally and through a mere memorandum. Today, that majority makes the mystifying determination that the rescission of DACA was unlawful. The majority does not even attempt to explain why a court had the authority to scrutinize an agency's policy reasons for rescinding an unlawful program. Thomas charged the majority was influenced by political correctness and explained that the court gave presidential administrations the perfect way to bind their successors to whatever programs they prefer. That would be unlawfully adopting significant legal challenges through executive branch emergency memorandum. Even if the agency lacked authority to effectuate the changes cannot be undone by the same agency in a successor administration unless the successor provides sufficient policy justifications to the satisfaction of this court. Thomas explained that the program was created illegally and therefore was unlawful from its inception. Again, John Roberts joining with the liberals to create a majority 5-4 decision against the reversal of DACA. It was created by a memorandum. President Trump used the same means to do away with it. And the court says, no, he did not give enough justification for it. Friends, on another issue, we know that there is a lot of media attention given to some officers that have gone rogue. They tell and they'll show time and time and time the failure of an officer. They'll present these stories and continue to fan flames. But there are stories also that are occurring day after day all over this country by officers who are placing their lives on the line and just putting forth heroic efforts and fighting for the safety and security of our communities across the nation. I just want to share one story that we became aware of here just this week from the DailyWire.com, and this is San Diego. Canine officer Jonathan Wisey had been credited with saving the lives of two young girls after rappelling down a cliff to rescue them from a car that their father had driven into the ocean in an apparent murder-suicide attempt over the weekend. According to the San Diego Union-Tribune, Wisey was near the San Diego Coronado Bridge responding to a call that the girl's mother made to police Saturday morning, in which she informed them that her husband was suicidal and planned to take the toddlers, both the two-year-olds, to the bridge and drive off it. ABC 10 reports that when Wisey arrived at the cliff area where the men ultimately drove off, he drove the car. He saw the car had flipped over into the ocean below and started to think of a quick plan of action. He grabbed his canine leash, wrapped it around himself, gave one end to the other officers arriving on the scene, kind of held on to each other. I've never done anything like that, holding on to each other's belts, recalled Sergeant Brigida Bells, one of the responding officers. Wisey then rappelled down 30 feet to the rocks below and swam toward the man, grabbed him under the arm, held him above water, and all of them above water, and pushed them toward the shore, reports ABC 10. San Diego Police Chief Nislight called his actions probably the most heroic thing I've seen in my 32 years. Both of the girls were still in the hospital as of Monday, but are expected to recover. And Wisey said that was the best news you could ever have. All I care about is those girls and are going to live and have a second chance at life. Well, the father has been charged with attempted murder and kidnapping, but here we have a story of an officer rappelling down a cliff in order to save these little toddlers from drowning. From Newsmax.com, following weeks of national protests since the death of George Floyd, President Trump signed an executive order Tuesday he said would encourage better police practices. His executive order would establish a database that tracks police officers with excessive use of force complaints in their records. It also gives police departments a financial incentive to adopt best practices and encourage co-responder programs in which social workers join police when they respond to nonviolent calls involving mental health, addiction, and homeless issues, and instructs the Justice Department to push local police departments to be certified by a reputable independent credentialing body, which use of force policies that prohibit use of chokeholds except when the use of deadly force is allowed by law. Going to Western Journal, unarmed social workers in Albuquerque, New Mexico, now responding to specific 911 calls instead of the police department. The city's mayor announced on Monday. Democratic Mayor Tim Keller pointed out that the creation of the Albuquerque Community Safety, which will serve alongside the police department and fire department as a first-of-its-kind department to respond to calls on inebriation, homelessness, and addiction, as well as mental health issues as well. Let's see, from the New American, the New York City Council wants to cut $1 billion from the budget of the New York Police Department. To slash the police budget unveiled June 12th in a joint statement from several council members, including the speaker. and have a $1 billion cut that's going to be less officers, reducing the headcount and cutting overtime. This will set well for those who have to call 911, I'm sure. Lowering associated fringe benefits and prioritizing the most impacted communities, hearing their demands, needs across the areas. And City Council statement mirrors a statement made by Mayor de Blasio June 7th, which she said he would redirect a percentage of the $6 billion budget toward social programs. Mayor de Blasio said, "We're committed to seeing a shift of funding to youth services to social services. New York City cutting their police budget by $1 billion. Pamela Geller has a story on her site here, quoting from CDLLife.com. As cities across the country are discussing defunding or disbanding their police departments, truck drivers are voicing concerns of safety. 77% of truck drivers responding say they will refuse to deliver freight to cities that defund police departments. Truck driving is historically ranked as one of the most dangerous jobs in the country. In 2018, they report that the U.S. Bureau of Labor Statistics reported truck driving as the most deadly job in the United States. Truck drivers have been voicing their concerns on the CDL Life app, and 77% of drivers responding to the survey said they will refuse loads to cities with disbanded or defunded police departments. Here's a couple responses. One says, if something was to happen, you have to take matters into your own hands, and then you risk being prosecuted for protecting yourself. Another one said, for my own safety and security of my customers' loads, I have already informed my dispatcher I will refuse all loads to cities that have defunded their police departments. From FoxNews.com, at least 7 police officers in Minneapolis have quit. Others are in the process of resigning in the wake of the protest over George Floyd's death that have morphed into a rallying cry to defund and dismantle police departments. We don't know how many plan on leaving here, they said, but 7 have their employment agreement separated. They don't feel appreciated, said a retired Minneapolis officer. Use of force expert told the Star Tribune, everybody hates the police right now. I mean everybody. Deputy Chief Henry Halverson said in an email to supervisors earlier this month, obtained by the Star Tribune, that some officers have simply walked off the job without filing the proper paperwork, creating confusion about who is working and who is not. Western Journal reporting Seattle officers, officials that is, have reportedly reached an agreement with protesters occupying a portion of the city's Capitol Hill neighborhood, replacing the temporary roadblocks put in place by the Capitol Hill organized protest, CHOP, with concrete barriers. The concrete barriers will be installed by the Seattle Department of Transportation. Now we're negotiating with those who are taking over the city. Now we're putting in concrete barriers instead, so to allow some traffic to go through and emergency vehicles to pass through. Isn't that interesting? Okay, also, here's a Las Vegas police officer shot in the head during an anti-racism protest that turned violent, paralyzed from the neck down, according to his family and the Las Vegas Metropolitan Police Department. This is Shay Michelonis, 29 years old, shot during an altercation that broke out following what had been a mostly peaceful protest on the Las Vegas Strip on June 1st, according to CBS News. Las Vegas police, who have a suspect in custody related to the shooting, appear to believe that he was targeted because he was in uniform. Back in a minute, you're listening to Crosstalk.
Back to Genesis with Dr. John Morris, popular creation speaker with the Institute for Creation Research. Dr. Morris, is there any evidence for Atlantis?
Chris, Atlantis was the mythical city which was submerged under the ocean. People living in the city adapted and finally evolved the ability to live underwater. Of course, this myth has no basis in fact. Humans could not live underwater, even if they swam in the water for generations. Nor have archaeological remains of such a mythical city ever been found. But there may be some basis in fact. The Bible says that there was a great civilization which was totally overwhelmed by water. This was, of course, the great flood of Noah's day. I wonder if the legend of Atlantis is really a faded memory of the flood. Even more interesting is that almost every culture around the world has the legend of the flood. I think all of this goes back to Genesis for truth.
To learn more about creation, get our free DVD called That's a Fact. Call us at 800-628-7640 and mention the promo code FACT.
We'll be right back.
You're listening to Crosstalk on VCY America. It's a news roundup day today. As Lord willing, tomorrow we'll be having a special Father's Day tribute that we'll be encouraging you to call in and participate in the broadcast here tomorrow. With our news roundup today, we continue with the story from the Daily Wire. Interesting story out of Olympia, Washington. Mayor Cheryl Selby has been a vocal supporter of Black Lives Matter and those protesting and rioting across the nation, yet when her own home was vandalized during the demonstrations, well, then she calls it domestic terrorism. As WND points out, a little less than 2 weeks after kneeling before activists, a gang of 50 protesters vandalized her home. "I'm trying to process this," she told the Olympia newspaper the day after the incident last Friday. "It's like domestic terrorism. It's unfair. It hurts when you're giving so much to your community," she said. Going back to the Daily Wire, they indicate that the Olympian reported late last week that the two groups converged in downtown Olympia. Some became destructive, burning flags, smashing windows, spray painting businesses before moving into her neighborhood and vandalizing the mayor's home. They chanted, "Abolish the police," outside her home, while someone spray-painted BLM on her door and on her porch. So she supported Black Lives Matter, gets her home vandalized and during the riots that happened there, and then calls it domestic terrorism. At least 50 people from Daily Wire are facing federal riot charges for inciting or committing violent acts during the national anti-racism protest, according to the Department of Justice, and more arrests yet to come. The federal charges cover a variety of alleged criminal behavior, including impersonating a U.S. Marshal in Florida, aiming a laser at police aircraft in Wisconsin, and inciting a riot in Illinois that caused damage to more than 50 businesses. The New York Post reported Friday, based on a cache of documents released to CBS reporter Catherine Herridge. Most of the arrests, at least 40 of the 53, were for violent acts, including tossing of Molotov cocktails into law enforcement vehicles and into the front windows of stores and other businesses, toppling historically significant statues on federal land. Of the 51 cases spread across 18 states brought by the Justice Department, thus far 20 involved allegations related to arson, 16 involved the illegal possession of a firearm, more often than not by a felon. Another 8 people face charges related to inciting a riot or civil disorder, Forbes added. Interesting story as well from Daily Wire. Monday, the celebrity-touted Minnesota Freedom Fund that's posted a message online after facing intense backlash over the bailout charity's allocation of funds and lack of transparency. According to their website, the organization had brought in over $30 million in donations since the death of George Floyd. However, only well over $200,000 in donations, less than 1% of their funds, have actually been used to bail out the protesters and rioters. Interesting. Frontpagemag.com. We have Philadelphia imam calling for bloodshed to take place. Talking about the Middle East Media Research Institute reports June 2nd, an Islamic scholar, Nafis Abu Sayyid Sparrow, updated a video to a YouTube channel in which he dismisses peaceful protest on Islamic grounds, saying even scholars of the past, they mentioned clearly that there is nothing found, no basis whatsoever in the Quran or the Sunnah for demonstrations or protest. He says, just tweeting, speaking, celebrities, don't follow them. To get freedom, brothers, it takes fighting. I'm sorry, unless you have got divine intervention. Moses didn't need any army to fight, but go to Muhammad. Didn't Muhammad have to fight? Go to all the prophets before. Get your verses at the verses. Did they not have to fight? And then challenges them to go on and fight. LifeSiteNews.com. An undercover expose shows anti-Trump protest group admitting to receiving Soros funds. It's a new video from Project Veritas showing an anti-fascist group whose main aim is to take down the Trump administration admitted to having received funding from globalist billionaire George Soros. T. Stern, head of the Atlanta chapter of Refuse Fascism, told an undercover journalist that their organization had received funds from Soros when it was focused on hosting events in support of abortionists. In the same recorded interview, Stern spoke of the group's aim to topple the Trump administration through street protest. Story goes on, but very interesting indeed. From FaithWire, rioters destroyed a Philadelphia statue of an abolitionist, Matthias Baldwin. Very interesting. Antifa defaced the statue to Matthias Baldwin in Philadelphia with the words colonizer and murderer. Baldwin fought against slavery, fought for black voting rights, and built schools for black children. Baldwin, born in 1795, moved to Philadelphia at 16 years old, went on to become a manufacturer and inventor. He argued against slavery, argued for the right of black Americans to vote, used his own personal income to pay for the education of black children. He hired blacks in his shop when it was not the norm, said Joe Walsh, a member of the Friends of Matthias Baldwin Park. He was Black Lives Matter before there was a slogan. The irony of vandalizing a monument to those who died to end slavery is lost on those who don't know their history, he added. Townhall.com, Bronson Stocking writing that a public school teacher in Pawtucket, Rhode Island, accused of vandalizing a statue of Christopher Columbus. Police observed two individuals exiting a vehicle, throwing paint on a statue of Columbus, then fleeing the scene. Police caught up with the vehicle, and yep, one of them was a public school teacher at the Joseph Jenks Junior High School in Pawtucket, Rhode Island. Western Journal reporting, House Speaker Nancy Pelosi said there are 11 statues currently standing in the U.S. Capitol building she wants to have removed. Currently, 11 statues representing Confederate soldiers and officials are on display as part of the National Statuary Hall collection in the United States Capitol. The letter demands all 11 of the statues be removed from their present locations. According to Pelosi, the men memorializing in the monuments advocated cruelty and barbarism, and then those statues don't belong in the Capitol. By the way, USA Today, a very interesting story has come out. June 8th, Democratic members of Congress wearing kente cloths and face masks knelt in Emancipation Hall to memorialize black lives lost to police brutality. House Speaker Nancy Pelosi read the names of unarmed black people who've recently been killed by police. She said, "We were there for 8 minutes and 46 seconds on our knees." The group then introduced the Justice and Policing Act of 2020, aimed at changing policing after a series of individuals have been killed. And in the days since, social media organizers have pointed out that these scarves that they wore, these colorful cloths that they wore, have historical ties to the slave trade in order to criticize the legislators' garment choice. Saying yesterday the Democrats wore these kente scarves and knelt down for their photo ops. So check this out. Kente cloth was worn by the Ashanti. It's made of silk, so the affluent wore it. The Ashanti were also known as slave owners and traders. And here they are parading these around their necks. USA points out that kente cloth has historical significance beyond slave traders, though, but that is its origin. The very reason why they're saying that these statues need to come down and all this is going on. And I'm looking at USA Today. They're not known as being a conservative publication, but they said the rating is true. We rate the claim that kente cloth was historically worn by the Asante people of Ghana, who were involved in the West African slave trade, true, because it's supported by our research. Although kente cloth does have ties to slavery, it is more widely recognized as a modern symbol of pride in African American culture and pride in cultural ties to West Africa. Well, they had to put that aspect in there as well. But to know that the scarves that they wore are ones that their origin have ties to slavery. Here's another great news story. WesternJournal.com, amid all of the turmoil, one heartfelt gesture brightened the lives of four officers with Alabama's Pell City Police Department. Sergeant Shenandoah McInnish told the Western Journal that the four officers were enjoying breakfast together at a local Cracker Barrel as a team and as a family when a man approached their table and volunteered to pay for their meals. The man made the gesture out of respect for their service and to offer condolences for the death of a Moody Police Department Sergeant Stephen Williams, a husband and father who was shot and killed on June the 2nd. With everything that's going on and what's happened with the officer in Moody, this gentleman decided he was going to buy us breakfast. Stunned by the generosity, the man said, "It's on me." Very interesting indeed. And they said it was just a beautiful moment. It's quite a story there. And showing love, appreciation, and respect. WND.com reporting the man arrested after a 92-year-old woman was attacked on a Manhattan street last week had at least 100 previous arrests, according to news reports. Oh, I saw the video of this. A woman pushing a, it looked like her walker down the street and a man coming up and just shoving her over, 92 years old, and now coming to find out that he had been arrested over 100 times previous. New York police sources told the Post that they recognized him from previous encounters. There was video caught of this. This was a push cart suddenly hit in the head by a passing man, knocked to the sidewalk. It was deliberate, and he is listed in the New York State's Sex Offender Registry for persistent sexual abuse. A level 2 sex offender described on the registry as being homeless. Milwaukee Journal Sentinel reporting that the new Milwaukee City Attorney, Tierman Spencer, announced that his office will be reviewing curfew tickets issued during recent protests to determine which citations will be enforced. He's declined to provide specific criteria that he'll be using to decide which of the $691 tickets will be dismissed or enforced. Why do we issue curfews? If you're not going to enforce them, and you're going to allow, in some cases, mayhem on the streets, Why do you have curfews? You issue tickets, and now he is going to make decisions which one of these he'll actually prosecute. His office is reviewing some 170 citations from May 30th to June 1st related to allegations of violations of an emergency curfew order issued by Milwaukee Mayor Tom Barrett, who said in a statement he supports the approach. WND.com, in a Sacramento suburb, arsonists specifically targeting homes flying American flags. Police investigating at least 4 incidents that occurred in Citrus Heights, just outside California's capital, in the early morning hours of June 6th. By the way, that's the anniversary of D-Day. Let's head over to the other side of the country, New York. As reported by the New York Post, a day before Flag Day, 2 city employees were spotted using the stars and stripes to mop the floor of a filthy Coney Island restroom. Caught on video, took the pictures, they're posting them. A veteran, enraged, an elderly veteran confronted them, and the parks guy didn't see what the big deal was, saying, "It's just a symbol." Daily Wire reporting, in a letter posted Monday, the National Executive Committee for the Boy Scouts of America announced a new badge related to diversity and inclusion in conjunction with the far-left anti-cop Black Lives Matter movement. The new badge will be a prerequisite becoming an Eagle Scout, according to the committee. Organizers are looking at this here and also requiring diversity and inclusion training for all BSA employees starting on July the 1st. We're going to take a quick break. I've got a few more stories I'd like to share with you here today. Some things going on in the state of Mississippi. Also, matters pertaining to the coronavirus that we want to keep you posted of as well. Some amazing statistics coming forth now again. We'll be back in a minute. You're listening to a news roundup on Crosstalk on VCY America.
Our society is being influenced by the entertainment media, and we don't even realize it. Why is it that many Christians entertain themselves by watching movies or programs that take God's name in vain, or feature sensual activity on Saturday night, and then go to church on Sunday to praise His name? That's the underlying message in the DVD, Power of the Air, by Dave Cristiano. This moving story features a missionary from Africa who warns that the church in America is being deceived and in great danger. A Christian that hears this message is convicted and makes a significant change in his life and sets out a plan to reach his city with the gospel. Watch this story unfold in the DVD, Power of the Air, available now for a donation of $18, with additional copies available for a donation of just $10 more. Call 1-800-729-9829.
You're listening to Crosstalk on VCY America. I appreciate a listener who earlier this week sent me an email bringing to my attention a doctrinal position that was taken by one of our recent guests here on Crosstalk, Jesse Lee Peterson. It is a position that we do not advocate here. He was not brought on to talk about doctrinal issues. We were not aware of this prior to his coming on the program, as he talked about rebuilding the man and rebuilding the families, and certainly his concern and outreach that he has for building up African-American families across this nation. But I do want to state that the doctrinal position declared on the video that was sent to us is certainly not one that we would concur with here at Crosstalker VCY America. LifeSite, or MakeThisLifeNews.com, Mississippi news outlet reports the Life Equality Act passed 33-11, now moves back to the State House for approval. It is a bill banning abortions done specifically to kill black babies, passing through again the Mississippi State House, now heading over to the State Senate. From WhiteHouse.gov, there is a column written by Vice President Mike Pence saying that there is not going to be a coronavirus second wave. He said in recent days, the media has taken to sounding the alarm bells over a second wave of coronavirus infections. Such panic is overblown. Thanks to the leadership of President Trump and the courage and compassion of the American people, our public health system is far stronger than it was 4 months ago, and we're winning the fight against the invisible enemy. He said, while talk of an increase in cases dominates cable news coverage, more than half of states are actually seeing cases decline or remain stable. Every state, territory, and major metropolitan area, with the exception of three, have positive test rates under 10%. And in six states that have reached more than 1,000 new cases a day, increased test has allowed public health officials to identify most of the outbreaks in particular settings, prisons, nursing homes, and meatpacking facilities, and contain them. Lost in the coverage is the fact that today less than 6% of Americans tested each week are found to have the virus. Cases have stabilized over the past 2 weeks, with a daily average case rate across the U.S. dropping to 20,000, down from 30,000 in April and 25,000 in May. And in the past 5 days, deaths are down to fewer than 750 a day, a dramatic decline from 2,500 a day a few weeks ago, and by a far cry from the 5,000 a day that they were predicting. The truth is that we've made great progress over the past 4 months, and it's a testament to the leadership of President Donald Trump. Mike Pence, he's got his column that goes for a couple more pages. It's an op-ed that's in the Wall Street Journal, June 16th. But the headline, "There Isn't a Coronavirus Second Wave," that's the headline given to the article there. I want to also, on this topic here as well, the New American reporting that findings from research, the Scripps Research Institute, suggests that as many as 45% of those infected with COVID-19 are free of symptoms. So even though you keep hearing, oh, there's all these people that you know tested positive for COVID, 45% infected are free of symptoms. The virus that causes COVID-19, not that dangerous, they report. That's great news, proving that it's not as dangerous with the, of course, the number of people getting it, the 45% not showing any symptoms. Researchers turned up some eyebrowsing results. One of the cases, they found a 96% rate of asymptomatic infection among thousands of inmates in four state prisons. Even the researchers were befuddled by this, openly wondering in their paper, why might the asymptomatic infection rate in this setting be so be an anomaly here, and why would it be so high? And so they talk about immunity gained from exposure to other beta coronaviruses and other matters as well, but 45% have no symptoms whatsoever. This came out in the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. A number of patients in Wisconsin hospitals confirmed with COVID-19 fell again Wednesday to the lowest point since April 2nd. According to the Wisconsin Hospital Association, 247 currently hospitalized patients had tested positive for the coronavirus, down from more than 400 at the beginning of June, and 28 fewer than reported on Tuesday. Of those known cases, 93 are in intensive care, with 72 counties. That's just a little over one person per county across the state of Wisconsin on average. Newsmax.com reporting more than 40% of the coronavirus deaths in the U.S. have occurred among residents and staff members at nursing homes and long-term care facilities. According to new analysis, Wall Street Journal examined the numbers related to COVID-19 cases and deaths, found 50,919 of the deaths happened in facilities for America's most vulnerable population. That's roughly 43% of more than 118,000 overall deaths in the U.S. You wonder, why were mayors putting people in with COVID into such facilities as well? By the way, from the Baraboo News Republic out of Wisconsin, Portage Police Chief Keith Klafke feels certain that the lockdown forced by COVID has contributed to an increase in needed response by officers to help those with mental health issues. It's on the increase significantly, and mentioned that they have responded to 227 welfare checks in the last 3 months, about 75 calls per month for that area. Just a couple other issues here. We have from WesternJournal.com, legislation introduced by three GOP senators aims to lessen America's dependence on China for prescription drugs, medical supplies, and devices by increasing manufacturing across the country. We have a number of legislators introducing here. Catch this. It's called Bring Entrepreneurial Advancements to Consumers Here in North America Act. And you like the acronym. It's also known as the Beat China Act, to incentivize pharmaceutical and medical devices and supply manufacturers to relocate to the United States. FoxNews.com reporting South Korea said Tuesday North Korea military demolished an inter-Korean liaison office building just north of the tense Korean border only days after the Hermit Kingdom threatened a tragic scene at this site. And coming out of New York, the state of Minnesota, WND.com has the story. When the state of Minnesota, amid the coronavirus pandemic, demanded near real-time information, including name, addresses, birth dates, symptoms, diagnoses, age, gender, race, ethnicity, city, and zip code of every hospital patient, a patient rights group protested. Citizens Council for Health Freedom has asked the health commissioner, Jan Malcolm, to withdraw her requirement. The organization has written a letter to each of the 130 hospitals in the state reminding them of their legal obligation to disregard the April 3rd Minnesota Department of Health notification letter. Big Brother flexing their muscle, demanding near real-time personal information on every patient. I'd like to open phone lines here today. If you'd like to comment on these or other current event stories, our number to Crosstalk, 800-733-9829, 800-733-9829. The NCAA officials reports the Christian Post will weigh a decision to move the 2021 men's basketball tournament games scheduled to be played in Idaho because the state recently passed a bill banning trans-identified males from competing in women's sports. So the NCAA tournament for 2021, slated to feature first and second round games, scheduled to be at the Taco Bell Center in Boise. But according to the Idaho Press, games scheduled for the center may not occur due to objections raised to the House bill legislation that was signed into law by the governor, Brad Little. The bill, which goes into effect July 1st, prohibits biological males who identify as transgender from participating in female athletics at the high school and university levels. Very interesting indeed. Our phone number to Crosstalk, 800-733-9829. Oh, by the way, Western Journal reporting that the Houston Texans head coach and general manager Bill O'Brien says that he will be taking a knee during the national anthem. Let's go to the phone lines. We have William calling in from East Troy, Wisconsin. William, you're on the air.
Brother Jim, I wanted to just give a little encouragement. I know you had on the gentleman about the police about a week ago, Jim Court. Corey, I can't remember his name.
Yeah.
But, yeah, thank you for that. But with all the police in the news, the Lord put a burden on my heart to call the local chiefs of police and the sheriff's department and just encourage them as believers to, or, you know, as Christians, to pray for our law enforcement people. We have family and friends who are in law enforcement. And I just want to tell you that I got two callbacks from chiefs of police thanking me and taking the voice message and sending it out to their deputies and officers. And what a grand opportunity for us as believers to encourage them and have opportunities to witness to them and seriously pray for our law enforcement department. I would just encourage the listeners to do that with heartfelt thankfulness, and the response that I've gotten back has been just phenomenal. So I think there's great opportunity. And then with all the suicide things that are going on, what a great opportunity for us to really be a light in a dark world. So I just wanted to encourage everybody to think about doing that.
Thank you, William. Appreciate your call here today.
God bless.
Bye-bye now. Our number 800-733-9829. Mark is calling from Monroe. You're on the air, Mark.
Yeah, not long ago, Chuck Schumer threatened Neil Gorsuch and Brett Kavanaugh if they dared to rule in favor of anti-abortion without Schumer getting any repercussions from there, at least that I'm aware of. So now all of a sudden the Supreme Court is ruling in favor of the DACA kids where this originated in the first place. So once again, crying Chuck starts crying. But I never have noticed any tears coming from him when it comes in regard to the aborted. So long story short, if this isn't a deep state manipulated tactic, I don't know what is. So.
Yeah.
When it comes to the Supreme Court, I don't know if they're being threatened, bribed. I believe they're at the very least, being manipulated. But those nine people are not helping out. I don't even think you can consider the conservative. So that's my point.
Thank you, Mark. Appreciate your call. Let's go to Michelle out of Toledo, Oregon. You're on the air.
Thank you. I just wanted to also support the statement by a previous caller who said he called in to the police chief where he was, and to give kind of a shout out to all different police chiefs to pray for people and in for appreciation of what they do and to keep up the good work, so to speak. I was just paraphrasing him. Mm-hmm. I had called the day this came up to begin with about the George Floyd issue, when we really knew it was not a matter of police violence and so much as it became totally a behavior of just violent outburst of people doing so much destruction everywhere and, you know, really terrorizing and trying to deliberately, violently accost police officers. I called my police station here and asked them to thank everyone there for the protection that they give us as citizens, for the work that they do tirelessly, often putting their own lives on the line, that they do this over and over. I've called them before, but now I was especially calling them to thank them for the work they do and how much we should all appreciate them. And I said to the woman who was taking the call, be sure you keep a large dollop of appreciation for yourself out of this. You handle calls from all kinds of citizens. Right now, a lot of them very violent in how they approach the police department and policemen. I want you to give a large dollop of appreciation to you, but would you be so kind as to say this to all the people in the police department?
Yeah.
And this should go out nationally because so many of us benefit so much from the police and the safety they accord for us.
Yeah,
and she said she would.
Thank you. Great idea. Thank you for the call. I'm up against a break. This is Crosstalk on VCY America. Our number 800-733-9829. We'll be right back.
For WorldviewReport.com, I'm Brandon House. So they're calling for ending police, defunding the police. Yes, there are some that want to do that. There are others that are more strategic, and what they're doing is they're pulling off the Hegelian dialectic process. Big fancy word, just means opposites fighting each other. Those who want police, those who do not. Those who want Marxism, those who want a constitutional republic. Those who are saying, let's end the police, are now supporting, encouraging, directly or indirectly, looting and rioting and burning, which causes most Americans to say, are you kidding? We need the police now more than ever. So what happens? There is a meeting in the middle with people like Ilhan Omar and other Marxists and Islamists. And what they're openly calling for in their own document, known as the Revolutionary Abolitionist Movement document, is neighborhood councils that oversee the police. And who do you think will sit on those? Marxist and Islamist. That's who will be overseeing your police. What kind of police do you think they'll hire? This is a Hegelian dialectic brainwashing operation.
This is Crosstalk on VCY America. Just a reminder, we've had a couple guests on recently, Titus Kennedy on Unearthing the Bible, and then Dr. Mark Hitchcock on Corona Crisis. I know that many have sought to contact our bookstore, got a busy signal, but we do encourage you. Those books are available at vcy.com. Through the end of the month, they have them greatly, greatly reduced. Vcy.com or 1-888-722-4829, 1-888-722-4829. Story on townhall.com indicated, this is really, really surprising out of New York City, the contact tracers, you know, for COVID, they hit a roadblock because as they asked people who have tested positive for COVID, that the mayor, Bill de Blasio, has forbidden the tracers from asking sick patients if they attended any of the protest rallies in the city. They cannot do that. Now, I know in Wisconsin, they were saying, well, did you go to the polls and vote during the midst of COVID? That was okay to ask, but don't ask. And believe me, when President Trump has his rally, and they've been trying to stop that rally in Oklahoma, even going to a judge to try and stop the rally, there's been a lot of encouragement of protests. But when it comes to these rallies, no, you're going to spread COVID. You don't care about people. And now come to find out that the mayor has forbidden any sick person to be questioned whether or not they attended any of the protests. Let's go to Racine, Wisconsin. Christine is calling. You're on the air.
Jim, I don't believe I'm being dramatic in saying that the greatest acts of terrorism that have been wrought against this nation have come from our Supreme Court. We are the decay from within. The perilous times that we are in cannot be overstated. Abortion, gay marriage, and now this latest where, you know, the justices have sided with the liberals. And I believe it comes from the churches. These gentlemen come from very liberal churches. And they felt that they are showing the cultural transformation that has taken place in this nation. And that's where we're at. And I think we need to pray fervently, but really understand the times.
Thank you, Christine, for your thoughts. Thank you. Blanche in Ohio, you're on the air.
Yes, I'd just like to say in support of our policemen, one bad apple can make all of them look bad. But our policemen, in my opinion, are 99,900% pure. And they're like ivory soap. If people out there remember ivory soap, 99 and 99 tenths, 100% pure. And I feel that way about our policemen. And we need to go to the polls and vote these people out that are all these horrible people up there are trying to do our country. And we need to pray and never quit praying because God hears prayers and He will answer our prayers.
Amen.
Put Trump back in there. He's the only one that ever loved and took care of our country. And stood up for us.
Thank you, Blanche, for your thoughts here today on Crosstalk. Dwight is next in Gilbert, Arizona. You're on the air, Dwight.
Yeah, thank you for taking my call. You know, Patrick Henry said it's time for all good people to come to their country. And I take on to that, and I think it's time for all good Christians to come to the aid of their country. You know, we're facing an election, and it's not an election between Republicans and Democrats. It's an election between right and wrong. And I think that every Christian needs to find the mind of God and vote according to the scripture. And if we do that, then we can once again become one nation under God, indivisible with liberty and justice for all.
Okay. Thank you, Dwight, for your thoughts there as well on that issue. Very interesting comments indeed. And friends, the matters are before us here, and they're getting certainly more and more intense as time goes on. Here we also have the impact that's going on during this month of June on children, as we have the long-running PBS children's program, Sesame Street, showing its support for LGBT Pride Month with a social media post on Twitter and Facebook. On our street, we accept all, we love all, we respect all. Happy Pride Month, and that's on top of what's been done by the Cartoon Network and Nickelodeon as well, celebrating Pride with the LGBT plus community, that coming forth. Friends, we have to realize much of what we are in today and experience is very much a spiritual battle that is taking place. And I just want to remind you of a few things as we close off the program today here on Crosstalk, that indeed we're in a spiritual battle, and all that's taking place here, we want to again remind you, as we've been airing announcements in our stations, that there is only one race, as Acts 17:26 says, and hath made of one blood all nations of men to dwell on the face of the earth. Regardless of skin color, we're all of the human race. We're made in the image and the likeness of God. And keep in mind that God loved this entire world. He loved all people groups. He gave his only begotten Son. James said we should not have respect of persons, should not show preference, partiality, but instead, as Jesus said, a new commandment I give unto you, that you love one another as I have loved you, that ye also love one another. By this shall all men know that you are my disciples, if you have love one for another. May I encourage you, ladies and gentlemen who are listening, to be loving, to be kind, to be compassionate, to be forgiving of one another. There is much that's happening, and folks, what this world needs, it needs Jesus. My heart went out this week as I became aware of the story that is coming out of India, a Indian Christian teen stabbed and stoned to death. Why? Because of his faith. It was incited by Hindu extremists, followed by traditional tribal religion in eastern India last week, stabbed and stoned a 16-year-old Christian boy, stoned him to death on account of his faith. I won't go through the details of what they all did, but a very horrendous story, and they shared how the 16-year-old was one who had, they were coming for his father, but his father was away taking a daughter for some medical treatment. But how this 16-year-old was known for his teaching the Bible, even at 16 years of age, and helping others daily through the Word of God. They said he knew the Word of God the most from among us. So he was the one who led us in a time of prayer and learning from the Bible every day in his house. And we see Christian persecution that is growing and rampant across this world, and we need to be in prayer. Prayer for one another, prayer for certainly what's happening here in the U.S., but to look unto this world as well and the needs that are so great. But we're in a spiritual battle, and what this world needs is Jesus. So let's be that salt, let's be that light, let's proclaim the good news of the Savior and proclaim the gospel. Thanks for joining us here today. Lord willing, tomorrow we'll be having our Father's Day tribute, giving you opportunity to call in with a special tribute to honor your dad or memory of your father if he is deceased, but certainly a time to give tribute as we approach Father's Day. Thanks for joining us today on Crosstalk.
You've been listening to Crosstalk via satellite and the internet from VCY America. Views expressed may or may not be those of this station. For a CD of today's program, send a donation of $6 or more to VCY Tape Ministry, 3434 West Kilbourne Avenue, Milwaukee, Wisconsin, 53208, or download by RSS or podcast from crosstalkamerica.com. And join us again for Crosstalk.